well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. So while we are waiting to see what the Supreme Court will do with the NRA's challenge to Florida's ban on gun sales to those under the age of 21, the Georgia Supreme Court has weighed in on that issue and has upheld the state's prohibition on keeping and bearing arms for young adults, 18, 19, and 20 years old. Although it's interesting, this was not specifically a Second Amendment challenge. So this does open the door, I think, for a future challenge to a Georgia statute on slightly different grounds. Anyway, I figured the best person to talk about this would be Georgia resident and Second Amendment advocate, Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio. It's been a while since we've had Mark on the program. So I invited him on. He said, yes, let's get right to it. Take a look and a listen. Mark, it's good to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Oh, Cam, it's always great to have, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me, brother.
You bet. So I got to ask me, what is your first reaction to the Georgia Supreme Court upholding the carry ban for under 21s?
I've been doing this a long time. My first reaction was take a deep breath and read what happened here. Don't throw out a decision. You know, don't let anything out yet. This story broke 5 minutes before I went on air yesterday. And if you listen to yesterday's program, I mentioned nothing about it. I hadn't had time to look at the brief. I hadn't had time to look at any of the news reports. And I hadn't had time to speak to the attorney in the case who argued the case, who happened to be my attorney in my action against OpenAI. In fact, on our last oral argument, he had to move the following morning to the Georgia Supreme Court to actually argue this particular case.
Okay.
So I have a little bit of inside information on this. You first have to look at what the Georgia Constitution says, Cam. And Georgia's Constitution is very clear. It says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, but the General Assembly shall have power to prescribe the manner in which arms may be borne. That right there is the basic crux of this case, because the Georgia legislature has spoken in law and said 18 to 20 year olds without military service cannot carry guns publicly in the state of Georgia. So a lot of people might be angry at what I'm about to say. And believe me, I understand this more than a lot of people who have been involved in these court fights. This is a great example of malum prohibitum, malum inse, where you've got a man-made law versus a what we know to be right and wrong, a moral ruling, right? Is it morally acceptable to tell an 18-year-old adult to 20-year-old adult that they cannot defend themselves with a firearm? Absolutely not. That's immoral in my book. Now we have malum prohibitum, that being man-made law in the form of the Georgia Constitution, that gives the state legislature the ability to do these things. And the Georgia state legislature did it. So we have two options facing us here in the state of Georgia. For your viewers might not know, I am in Georgia, so I'm intimately involved here. I'll go into that in just a second, more so than the average resident, because I have a son who was about to become a plaintiff in one of these cases. So I'll hold on to that for a second. But okay. As a Georgia resident, I know that this is intrinsically, inherently immoral and wrong. But I've learned to respect the law for a number of reasons we can talk about later. This might upset a lot of people, but as far as the law is concerned, I don't think the Georgia Supreme Court could have ruled any other way, given the circumstances and the narrowness of this case. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but obviously we've been following this here in the state of Georgia very, very closely. Mm-hmm. So the Georgia Supreme Court made it very clear that the court has always and must show deference to the Georgia Constitution and the process. So the Georgia Freedom Caucus put a statement out yesterday, Cam, that said that they hope this goes to the Supreme Court and that we can finally rid ourselves of these types of laws. The attorney in the case, John Monroe, made it very clear that will never happen because the Georgia Supreme Court, the Georgia State Supreme Court, is the end-all, do-all authority on all matters related to the Georgia State Constitution. So it's over until one of two things happen: change to the Georgia Constitution, or the legislature gets off their duff and changes the law. At which point, if the Georgia legislature does that, in light of the fact it's likely not, you're not likely not going to see a push to change the Georgia Constitution to remove that clause, yeah, you will more likely see legislative action taken. If they do that, the fight ends immediately. because the Supreme Court wouldn't even take the case because it becomes a matter of Georgia constitutional law, just like it is now, even though we don't like the ruling. That's the long-winded version of my assessment of what happened. While I don't like it, we need to make some changes.
Well, yeah, and I hope that the Freedom Caucus will get to work on that, right? I mean, again, and I understand why this case is not going to get appealed directly to the state, to the U.S. Supreme Court, because you are dealing with a state law. This was not actually a challenge under the Second Amendment, right? This was a challenge under Georgia's Constitution. The one thing I'm curious about, Mark, I mean, I get that the Georgia Constitution grants the authority to the General Assembly to regulate the manner of carrying. But at the same time, like if the legislature decided, all right, anybody under the age of 45 can't carry.
Correct.
Or under the age of 60 or anybody over the age of 65 can't carry. Do you think that the state Supreme Court would have given that same deference to the legislature? I mean, is this really just a blank check for the legislature to decide who gets to exercise their right to bear arms in the state of Georgia?
You know, that's a fantastic question, one that I thought about myself, too. We talk about these things a lot when we talk about the subjects that you and I talk about publicly, right? Where is that line? Where is that bar? Where is it set? What changes it? What can make it change? And I think in this case, the only answer to this is it didn't. The narrowness of the scope was the 18 to 20 year old, which fell within the law that the legislature passed. And I guess what I'm saying is we would probably have to see a case like you're describing for that to occur. Look, is a law constitutional just because it says it, just because the legislature passed it? Could the Georgia Assembly bring back slavery?
Right.
Okay. You know, remember what Biden said, right? No amendment to the Constitution is absolute. Now, you know, I'm using that as an extreme example.
Sure.
I don't know the answer to that question. And I think because of the narrowness and the scope of the case itself here in the Stevens case, we didn't get that question and the court didn't bother with it. They stayed within focus. And if you look at Heller, right, we would have loved to have seen Heller expand. We would have loved to have seen Scalia come a little bit outside the guardrails in Heller, but he stayed very narrowly focused within the guardrails to the carrying a gun or having a gun kept in the home. We would have liked to have seen that expanded. And what happened afterwards? We had subsequent cases follow through using Heller to expand when we went into McDonald, when we went into Bruin, for example, okay? Yeah. Even Rahimi. So, this just builds upon itself. So I guess that's the only answer I can give you to that question, not being a lawyer myself.
Yeah. And I don't know that you're going to know the answer to this question either, but have you heard if any Second Amendment groups in the state of Georgia plan on challenging this statute under Second Amendment grounds? Or because, you know, I mean, listen, you've got a number of cases that are already if you file suit today, it's going to be what, 5 years, 6 years before that case could get up to the Supreme Court. You've already got Worth versus Jacobson. I think that's petitioned to the Supreme Court right now. You've got NRA versus used to be NRA versus Bondi. I can't remember what it is now, but NRA versus blah, blah, which is the challenge to Florida's ban on gun sales to under 21. So there are a lot of cases that are already in the pipeline and have already made their way either up to the Supreme Court or going to be at the Supreme Court within the next few months. Does that factor into whether or not there's going to be another legal challenge to the Georgia statute, but this one based on a violation of the U.S. Constitution?
I haven't heard that, but I would not put it past Georgia Carry, or formerly known as Georgia Carry, now Georgia GA2A.org. And of course, gun owners, Georgia gun owners, GGO is extremely vocal on these issues. I haven't seen anything personally about it yet. This just came down last night at 3:55 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this case moved fairly quickly. Go back to my son, for an example. Second Amendment Foundation was wanting to challenge this, just like we did up in Minnesota, as you know, and others. Won the case in Minnesota on 18 to 20 year olds, for example. The problem that we have here is, as you just mentioned, these cases take so long to play out. By the time they get to where they need to be, they become a moot case because the plaintiff is already aged out and it no longer applies, which instantly drops the case. Yeah. Which is what happened in my son's case when we were talking with attorneys at 19 years old. And we just didn't even think we had enough time to get it to 21 years old before it would have been a mooted case.
We
found a plaintiff here in Georgia, Stevens, who was 20 at the time this ruling came out. But I would think and guess, being a longtime, many years member, an original one of the first 100 members of Georgia Carry, now GA2A, I would be hard pressed to believe that they were not going to challenge this or go after the legislature for a change in law, I think is what you're going to see first. Again, yeah. That's a guess, a fairly educated guess. And John Monroe being very involved, the attorney in the case, you know, over many, many years with Georgia Carey, GA2A, I would think that we would probably see some type of action in the legislative body far more than we would see some attempt to change the Georgia Constitution, because the Georgia Supreme Court has been clear on this issue many times when it comes to they are loath to try to move again. In other words, they're working on the presumption that the Georgia Constitution is that any law that's passed under that is constitutional. That's why they're not giving it strict scrutiny. That's part of the argument that John was. There's a lot of nuance going on in the case. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is we lost the case. We need to make some changes. It's that simple.
So, I mean, I guess that brings us, you know, to the next question. If there is a legislative push to change the law, how tough a fight do you think that's going to be? I mean, you know, on paper, the Georgia legislature is very Second Amendment friendly. But is this something that you're anticipating we're going to get some pushback even from some Republicans?
Yes, I would hesitate to name some of the Republicans right now that might push back on this. There will be a push to change the law. There's no question about it. That's why these groups exist. That's why I'm a member of them. That's why we're here. But it's really hard to pinpoint a couple politicians. You know, you got to follow the money trail. Every town law and every town for, you know, all the anti-gun groups are going to be chucking money at these cases because this is all they've got now with Trump in office.
Mm-hmm.
No control in Congress. They've got the states. And believe me, if they can smell a victory in a state, in a red state like Georgia, oh, they're going to throw gobs and gobs of money at it. And they have a hell of a lot more money than we do. So I would expect that there would be extreme pushback. I don't, from a Republican standpoint, yeah, probably. I would hesitate to name a few at this point, but that will play out. I think we're going to see these. I think we're going to see what we're talking about here actually unfold. So it'll be interesting to go back and review it. Maybe after the next Georgia legislative session, right?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, right? I mean, I don't know when sine die is for Georgia this year, but I mean, most state legislatures are getting ready to adjourn. A couple of them already have adjourned. So this is something that's probably going to have to wait until the 2026 session, right?
Yeah, we've already, sine die has already come and gone. We have a very short 90-day window in Georgia before sine die. Forgive me for not knowing the exact date. I should know the exact date of that, but it has come and gone. We are now looking at the next legislative session. So there's not going to be any activity. 18 to 20-year-olds in this state are screwed out of their right to carry a firearm unless they've had military service. You know, look, there are some exceptions, okay? My son can carry a firearm at home. You go, yay, woo. That's, your dad's got plenty of firearms at home. He can carry a gun in his car, but only if the car is registered in his name. Now, my son lives at home and goes to school. He's in his second year of college. The truck is in my name. He can't carry a gun lawfully in the truck he drives because it's registered to me. Now, we're going to make that change for him as a result of that.
Okay.
And he can carry a long gun. But let's be real. Is that practical? Is he going to walk around, you know, where he goes with a long gun? No.
Right. Well, and I mean, to that end, that's great that, you know, you can change the registration of the truck over to his name and he can carry in the truck. But again, we're told all the time, don't leave your firearms in your car, right? Because they get stolen. So it seems to me like, all right, if you're going to let these under 21s transport a firearm in their car and they can have it loaded for self-defense, why shouldn't they be able to put that gun on their hip or put it in an ankle holster or wherever they want to carry it and be able to bear arms once they leave that car? I mean, that seems to be like a pretty common sense addition to Georgia law. I know it's got to be a fight, as you say, for all those reasons you laid out. But I guess the good news is we've got some time to start lobbying lawmakers now in advance of the 2026 session. So, you know, hopefully we've got a bill drafted, ready to go. And this can be one of the top priorities for the Freedom Caucus and Second Amendment supporters there in the Georgia legislature next year.
I hope you're right. The one thing that we do have is we now have a court decision, so we know how we have to tailor the fight.
Yeah.
So that's always positive. It's not like we're looking at something that has not yet been adjudicated. It's been adjudicated. Now we know how and what we need to do to get it taken care of. These are frustrating battles. You know, you've got law telling you that you're an adult at 18 years old. My son can move out. He can get in an argument with me and my wife and he can move out. He can't take my truck, but it's not in his name. See, if I flip that over to his name. But the point that I'm trying to make is he is a legal adult.
Yeah.
He leave. He can enter into marriage. He can enter into divorce. He can file bankruptcy. He can be charged as an adult for felonies. Everything that goes with adulting, he can do except defend himself with a firearm unless he's walking to and from his truck or his vehicle in any other person's case, whatever their vehicle may be, and has it in the vehicle. Look, a pickup truck in Georgia with a Daniel Defense and 6 hour sticker on the back of it, you know, that's a conversation too. Should you put those stickers on your vehicles? That's right. Pretty high likelihood that there's a gun in the vehicle. That kind of thing. It also might be a deterrent to some road rage maniac who sees those stickers. I'm not going to mess with that thing. Yeah, so there's all these goofy arguments about this. But the thing that's most important is the constitutional aspect of this. You're either an adult or you're not.
Right.
And that goes right back to what we said at the outset, malum prohibitum, malum inse, man-made law versus moral law versus our rights. And this is a clear violation of that. So we're seeing this fight play out in Florida right now. It's obviously just come to a close here in Georgia yesterday, but it's at its beginning stage, I can promise you, because the gun groups here will get very active in the process.
All right. Well, that is good to know. Mark, as always, my friend, it is great talking with you. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
I love it, man, and I love you. It's always fun, Cam. Thanks for having me today.
You bet, man. We'll do it again soon. And I think I'll be with you Sunday night, right? Is that right on the MonsterCast?
You will be with me on the MonsterCast Sunday night. This topic will come up among some other things as well. We've got a lot of things to cover with you. So looking forward to that. Ladies and gentlemen, catch Cam on Armed American Radio at armedamericanradio.com or to find a station near you.
All right. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you soon. Mark Walters thanks, from Armed American Radio here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks once again to Mark for joining us on the program. And, you know, I guess I'm glad that it sounds like this fight is going to move to the legislature. You know, lawsuits cost money. I mean, these things are not cheap. To take a case up to the Supreme Court, $1 million or more. And, you know, you've got to be judicious. I mean, especially if you're a state level group, if there are other cases that are already further along in the pipeline, do you want to duplicate those efforts or do you want to, you know, go a different route? And I think in this case, the fastest way for adults under the age of 21 to be able to exercise the right to carry in Georgia is going to be through the legislature changing the law as opposed to challenging it now in federal court, where, again, you've got to go through the U.S. District Court. Then you'd have to go, I forget what the Court of Appeals Georgia is, but you'd have to go through the appellate court, maybe an en banc review. Then it gets up to the Supreme Court. Hopefully, by the time a Georgia case would get to SCOTUS, the Supreme Court will have long decided this issue. Because, as I said, you've got the NRA case out of Florida. NRA is a petition to the Supreme Court. That cert petition has been filed. That's probably not going to be dealt with until the fall, I think, because the state of Florida has some time to respond. And we actually don't know what the response is going to be. Florida's attorney general has said he doesn't want to defend the law. So it may be that the court ends up appointing an amici to basically defend Florida's law. That could take some time as well. And then you've got, as I mentioned, the Worth case out of Minnesota on the right to carry. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about that, the Supreme Court may have turned away the challenge by Keith Ellis. I think, in fact, that they did dispose of the Worth case. Attorney General Keith Ellison had appealed the Eighth Circuit's decision allowing 18 to 20-year-olds to exercise their right to carry. I believe that cert petition has been denied. It is hard to keep track, but I'm 90% sure that that's the case. All right, let's move our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with the case out of South Carolina, the headline suspect on probation at the time of murder-suicide. This happened over the weekend in Greenville County, South Carolina. Anderson County deputies say that a guy named Nathan Curriton kidnapped Taylor Mirage from a gas station in Malden, South Carolina on Saturday, then driving away, trapping Mirage in the car. Eventually, investigators say that Curriton shot Mirage and then turned the gun on himself. Fox Carolina took a look at the criminal history of Curriton and found that he had been sentenced to probation in 2023 for second-degree assault and battery. Now, that alone is problematic, but Fox Carolina said they requested more records from the Greenville County Clerk of Court's office that shows that Curriton was also ordered to take substance abuse counseling, supposed to enroll in a domestic violence intervention program. But in February of this year, just a few months ago, Curriton reoffended. He was charged with domestic violence of a high and aggravated nature, kidnapping, and resisting arrest. Now, the charges alone would have been enough to revoke Cureton's probation and put him behind bars. But as Fox Carolina reports, despite his previous record, despite his status on active probation, a judge granted Cureton a $25,000 bond, which is a really low bond considering the charges, right? Domestic abuse of a high and aggravated nature, kidnapping, as well as resisting arrest. He posted that bond in March, again, less than a month after he was alleged to have reoffended. But he was ordered to be on house arrest with GPS monitoring. And as we've talked about before, you know, those GPS monitors, they can be cut off. If you leave the house, if you're somewhere where you're not supposed to be, it's up to the monitoring company to become aware of that, to report that to law enforcement, for law enforcement to respond. It's not like, it's not a tether. It's not keeping anybody stuck in their home. It's maybe a way to keep track of where they are. And I say maybe because a lot of times these things aren't actively being monitored at all. And in this case, again, the question is, why was Cureton out? As Fox Carolina reports, according to state law, a probation officer can request a judge place an offender in prison if any condition of their probation is violated. Sounds like that was, in fact, the case. Fox Carolina has called the South Carolina Department of Probation, Parole, and Pardon Services to ask if, in fact, that was done, if that request was made. But, yeah, there's no reason why this guy should have been out on the streets and able to kidnap somebody, kill that individual before killing himself. This sounds like was entirely avoidable if the criminal justice system had worked the way we expect it to. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Phoenix, Arizona, where the Phoenix PD says a woman shot a home intruder on Wednesday afternoon. I don't have a ton of information about this. It was about 1:40 in the afternoon. Police Sergeant Brian Bauer says a woman arrived home, walked inside, and found a unknown woman inside. The resident of the home was armed, shot the alleged intruder. The person who was shot was taken to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. They were expected to be released from the hospital at some point Wednesday night. Sergeant Bauer said they're speaking with the homeowner, trying to find out if there's any relationship between the woman that was shot or the homeowner. They said at this point it's too early to determine. Police have not released any names at this point, but at this point the investigation appears to show that the shooting was in self-defense. We will keep our eyes open for any more updates and details as it become available and give them to you once they are. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man from DeSoto County, Mississippi, who was able to save his neighbor when his neighbor's tractor pinned him against a tree. I living in a rural area, I didn't really have any idea of just how big and heavy and powerful this farm equipment was until I started seeing my neighbor hay some of the pastures around here. I mean, this could have been a deadly situation. Steve McMicking was using his tractor to move a dead tree at his home. This is back on Mother's Day. And he said it was the worst mistake I made in my life because it ended up changing my life forever. So the tree slipped out from under the tractor's bucket and then went over the top of the steering wheel, hit him in the chest, and ended up pinning him to the seat of the tractor. He began yelling for help. He said, I was bound to determine if I was going to die. I was going to die hauling for help. He said, my last breath was going to be help. Well, one of his neighbors, a man named Blake Rivera, just happened to be outside. He was on his phone talking to somebody. He's about 200 yards away. And Rivera said, I thought I heard somebody hollering help. And I told him, the guy was on the phone with him, I'm going to have to call you back. So he went to the sound of the noise, got his ATV out and drove it around. He said, by the time I heard it again, I looked over there and I saw him sitting on the tractor pinned up. Rivera was unable to move the tree himself. I mean, again, McMicking was using a tractor to do this. So it's not like Rivera could use his upper body strength to move that tree. He ended up running back, grabbing a chainsaw, calling 911. And then doing what he could to get that tree cut up and, again, relieve the pressure on McMickey. And he suffered a dislocated shoulder. Back was broken in two places. Right arm shattered from shoulder to elbow. Spent 8 days in the hospital. So, I mean, this was serious. This wasn't just, you know, minor scrapes and bruises. News Nation reports that yesterday the two reunited for the first time since Mother's Day. McMicking said of his neighbor, he said, "Thank goodness he heard me and was able to help me." He said, "I didn't think I'd get emotional, but he was a blessing from God. He really was. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a neighbor in need, Blake Rivera, we thank you for your very, very good deed." All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, and that is going to do it for this week's Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day today, Friday, over the course of the weekend as well. We're going to be keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. We'll be back with you with another program on Monday of next week. Got some good guests coming up. I'm excited about it. I'm going to keep it a secret, but going to be hearing some new faces and new voices, seeing some new faces next week on the program. Again, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You'll get great benefits at every level of support, but no matter which level you choose, you'll be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing right here. And we greatly appreciate your support because it is desperately needed these days. So thank you again. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free. He went almost the entire show without crowing, but there you go. I knew he was going to do it, so I had to keep rolling.